Hello, this is Chaos Radio. Chaos Radio is the podcast of the Chaos Computer Club, and this is the first episode of our international edition. This episode has originally been recorded for the 10th edition of the German podcast Chaos Radio Express, but in order to make it easily accessible to our international listeners, we put it up here as well. I'm going to talk to Regine Debatty, main author of the weblog We Make Money Not Art, and she also gave a talk at the 22nd Chaos Communication Congress. Okay, so hello, Regine, are you there?
Yes, Tim, I'm here.
Okay, that's great. Did I state correctly that you're from Belgium? I'm a bit confused. You are living in Italy?
Yeah, I'm Belgian and I'm living in Italy now.
Okay, since when?
3 years, long years.
So why are you doing this? I mean, why did you move to Italy?
Oh, because I've lived in several countries, like France, England, Spain, and I thought Italy would be the perfect dream country for me because of the food and the culture, and I had this huge expectation about Italy, so I've been very disappointed, but I fell in love with a nice Italian guy, so I stayed for him, but we are going to move to Berlin in April.
You will?
Yes.
Oh, that's great news.
Yes.
Okay, so, but you didn't mention art. I mean, isn't art also a reason to go to Italy?
Ancient art, if you like old stones, Italy is great. But as I'm more interested in media art, I think Berlin is a much better place for me because there are media art in Italy, but it's not as exciting as here.
Okay, so you are already pointing me to what I have to explain. You are running a weblog, a quite popular weblog, if I may say that, on the internet, which is called We Make Money, Not Art. Mm-hmm. I don't know when I really stumbled upon this weblog, quite a while ago, but since then I noticed that first, I was getting new information that nobody else was blogging about, and then I got the same information because everybody was more or less getting it from you. So, and you have been very, very active in, I mean, when did you start that weblog?
A year and a half ago, in March 2004.
Okay, so it's pretty new still, but it's already it's very active. You have up to 3 or 4 posts a day sometimes. I mean, sometimes you're
even more.
even more. So I wonder how you're doing this. I mean,
I just left my job. I decided that blogging would be my job, so I do it full time. I take it as a work, and it's a very pleasant work. It's really my passion. But I get up early to work, and sometimes it's easy because I find great news very quickly, so I finish at 11 o'clock in the morning, but most of the time it's not easy. I really have to work a lot to find the interesting news, so I'm still in front of my computer at 10 o'clock in the evening. And no, it's really work. Like, I also, because of my blog, I get invited to conference. But I go to conference, I try to attend, and I try to talk and listen to the other speakers, and then I go back to my hotel room or to an internet cafe and start blogging. And if I have to take the plane at 7 o'clock, I will be up at 4 o'clock because I want to blog a little bit. It's like I really love it. It's like a work, and I know that if I have readers, it's also because they know that every day they can come to my blog and they will find something new.
And well, can you say how many people are following your blog? Do you have any idea?
Apparently it's over between 30,000 and 35,000 unique visitors each day,
which is quite a lot.
Yeah, it's not as much as Boing Boing, but it's, I think it's amazing. I'm first impressed by that.
Okay, but Boing Boing is getting the news from you now. Partly.
Yeah, partly.
So what's the story behind the name of the weblog? That's really what's interesting me.
Okay, that's the way the blog started. Actually, I was working for a new media and virtual reality company, and had a boring job, and we wanted to have our own project with one of my colleagues. And so we met that guy who was working for a communication company, and he was at the time was quite obsessed with mobile phones, and he made some artistic application with mobile phone. He showed it at galleries outside of Italy. And his boss heard about it, and he thought, "Wow, that's interesting." And he managed to sell this artistic application to one of the main mobile phone operator in Italy. So we thought, "Oh, that's great! So we have someone who's kind of half an amateur, half an artist, and half." I don't have the right to give a third half, but I will give it anyway. He's also a hacker. And here's the industry on the other hand, and both of them meet because he has met something with that technology. So we thought maybe we should investigate the field. We wanted to have a project. We didn't know exactly what kind of project, but we wanted to investigate how artists, hackers, and amateurs are using or misusing technology, and see if somehow they could meet or collaborate with people who are selling and manufacturing this technology. And so we thought before launching a project, maybe we should try to document it and try to see what's happened. And we thought the best way to document it would be to write a blog. So we were four people in the beginning, but the others were not interested in the blog at all. So I just ended up.
So you're doing it alone now?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I was alone, and then I have two collaborators. That's pretty new, like two people who are collaborating and writing a post each week or more if they feel like that, if they have time. Like this brilliant guy from Japan who's called Konami Shinichi, who is a researcher in the University of Colorado. He has worked in Tokyo and also for the Fraunhofer Institute, and he's a specialist of RFID, but he's quite interested in media art, so he's covering the new media art scene in Japan. And I have someone from Berlin who's Sasha Poflep, who's studying at the UDK in Berlin, and is a new
University of Arts.
Yeah.
Universität der Künste. So it's starting to become a community blog in a way, but you're the main contributor still, I think. So yeah, we haven't really touched on. I mean, did you already? Well, so why do you make money, not art? So you're does it mean your work you do not consider your work to be art? Is it just news? And how do you make the money of it to quit your day job?
I don't think I'm doing art. I see it more like a service I meet many students, and they ask questions to me, like they say, "Oh, I would like to do that, and have you heard something similar projects?" And to me, it's like a database and a catalog of projects. So if you're a student and you want to use RFID technology in a particular way, you could go on my blog and there's a tag for RFID, or make a search and you will see that other people have done something similar. So you won't repeat the same stuff, or you will have a base. You will get inspired by something, or you will take another path because you will see that other people have explored it in another way. It's more like a service.
It's a resource, yeah. It's definitely a resource for finding cool stuff. And if you don't know the weblog, I can really recommend checking it out at wemakemoneynotart.com.
Com
with dashes in between. So where does the money come from? Is it like ads supported, or is there no money coming in?
Yeah, no, there's a bit of Google AdSense. I don't know, should I explain what it is?
Well, we can. I mean, it's basically the well-known ad service by Google.
Yeah.
Are you using it in a special way?
No, not at all. It doesn't work for me very well anyway. So I get a bit of money from it because I have a lot of traffic, but it seems that my readers are not click monkeys, and many, many of them read me through RSS feed, so they don't even see the adverts. And then we have banners, we have a bit of advertisers, and we are very choosy. Like, I would prefer to have no money than have a stupid advertiser. Like, for example, the blog is called We Make Money Not Art. It seems that if you Google make money, one of the first results is my blog. So every week I got people who want to advertise on my blog for credits and debt recovery, and okay. We don't want them. So we have Art Institute or Vodka. We had a very, very nice campaign for Vodka, or galleries, or yeah, stuff like that. And then, yeah, because my blog is quite famous, I get paid to write for elsewhere or to talk.
So it's a mix of everything. I mean, yeah. I think this is typical for many people who are more or less building their private business around their blog or around their media outlet, whatever it is. Also, podcasting is more or less following the same path. And I think that's it's a very good way, and it's a good mix. Because on the one hand, you're really offering a service to people who are interested and really can't follow that much. I have been very impressed many, many times how much good stuff there is on the internet. Usually if you just browse around, you don't really find it. And it's very important to find the right channel, the right source for people filtering out the unnecessary things and really finding the pearls on the net. So we talked quite a lot about how this works and how you're working, but not so much about what it's all about. So can I say it's about media art? Is this really the focus, or what would you define as the focus of your research?
Yeah, it should be about media art, or artists are using technology, but I'm also writing about like things I like. I write a lot about biotechnology or interaction design or vintage stuff. It depends on my mood, but yeah, I think it's about new media art. But I got a nomination recently for best medical blog. So I don't know. I thought it was about new media art, but I'm starting to have doubts.
Okay, just too many awards out there on the internet. Getting back to Regine. So we talked quite a lot about your weblog now and what you're focusing at. You have today, you just gave a talk at the Chaos Communication Congress here in Berlin. The title was High-Tech Media Art, or did we change that?
What was the title?
What was the title?
New Media Art of the Trodden Track, and there was a subtitle which was Artists Misusing Technology.
Ah, okay. So when we invited you, you knew that you were coming to a Hacker Congress. So what I'd like to know is, what is your definition of hacking, and what's your definition of a hacker? I know that's not a, that's not a simple question, but just like, what's your, I mean, what's the primary image you get into your head when you hear, oh, that's the hacker? What are you thinking about?
I won't give a definition. I will just jump on your last question, which is how I see them. I see them in a very different way from what I saw them a few months ago. Like I saw them as, yes, as the, like, yeah, the people who get to the bank account of other people and can, and I didn't see them really as bad people, but I only had the media image by reading CNN or USA Today, so I didn't have a very good image, but it wasn't very clear. I imagined them like living in dark spaces and acting only during the night with long hair, and that's it. And then I made an interview of you, and I could ask very, very silly question, and Tim Pritlove was very patient with me and answered everything, so I had a very different view, and it's really confirmed here. Like I thought, oh, well, it might be terrible. Will this place be clean? And yes, this place is clean and luminous, and they are good looking hackers. And I was quite afraid. Like I was going to a hacker congress to talk about new media art, so I thought, oh, how will it be perceived? Will I get rotten tomatoes because they won't be interested? They will say, oh, that's bullshit you're talking about. But I just found a crowd of very, very curious people and very open-minded. And I've made similar talks in other occasions, and I saw people just leaving the room because they couldn't understand what we were talking about, and making questions like, why are these artists wasting money and their time? And that was today. I was just in front of a crowd which was very open-minded and made lots of questions and had comments, and everything was very pertinent. So it was nice. Not that much my talk for me, but the moment after, when I had people commenting and discussion starting, and see that they were talking between each other as well. So it was a new experience for me.
Well, yeah, that pretty much matches my impression I have from hackers. Of course, there are many, many variants, and it's totally impossible to define a single individual just by throwing that tag on him, like being a hacker. But in general, this open-mindedness is probably the most important thing. So when you say that, there's an interesting essay that's quite popular by a guy called Paul Graham, who is itself a programmer, quite successful programmer as well. And he wrote an essay. Actually, he wrote a big book, but this small part is just one chapter of it, and it's called Hackers and Painters. And he's comparing hackers and painters, and basically showing that he sees much more relationship between a painter and a hacker than any other scientist, that hacking in general is not a scientific approach, but it's more the same approach like a painter has when he's painting a picture, like applying color here, but like correcting it, looking it, reiterating over the process all the time. And I think, well, for me, from my experience, that really, really made sense. So what might be the connection between the art scene and the hacker scene, or what is are artists hackers in general, or can you point out some example where you think these things meet?
Okay, so they are both curious about the world and try to understand it and make it understandable. Also, I've got the feeling that there are more points in common between hackers and new media artists than between a new media artist and a contemporary artist. Like many new media artists, they don't regard themselves as artists. Like I made interview and I said, oh, in your work as an artist, they say, no, I'm not an artist. I'm an engineer, I'm a hacker, I'm a musician, or I'm a designer. So points in common, there are many. Yeah, there are just people who like to put their hands on technology, who are not happy with the way it is and want to change something. But while hackers made the technology work, the artists have a different perspective. They just want the technology to work even more or less just to get their point. Like they won't solve a problem, they will raise a question. Yeah, but they won't make a perfect technology that works for others. It's also that they do it just for that very specific project, and they don't have the sense of community of sharing the what they have discovered with others. Of course, it's changing because some are using open source method. And
well, that I think that's interesting, because when I was looking at media art, probably how it was defined 5 years ago, media, well, you became a media artist because you were using a TV or because you were using any electronic device for some weird reasons. Sometimes I didn't really understand why the object was inside the whole installation at all. It didn't really do anything for the thing they were producing at all. And yeah, there's one thing I also noticed that you mentioned, that they're not really diving into the technology itself. Mm-hmm. Not really exploring its innards to really understand how it works and make something new out of it. It's just more attaching it to something, like putting into it. But I also have seen, especially on your website, quite a few projects in the recent time that really change this image. So do you have the feeling that there's a change going on? That like hacker scenes and artist scenes are gluing together in a way.
Not really, but I think I'm not interested in new media art for long enough. Like I became interested in new media art when I started the blog, which is one year and a half ago, so I don't have the same perspective as you might have. I think they're still two separate worlds, and what I've seen today from the conference is that of course they should meet. Like I talked with several hackers and they said we know how to make things work and we are developing some project, but we lack the coolness factor that maybe a collaboration with an artist could bring. And also there's several artists are real hackers. Like also today we showed a series of workshop, like the artists which organize workshop and invite people like the men of the street and say, come and we will show you how to make a key holder that lights up each time you are in front of an RFID reader, or they help people make wearable artifacts, or they show people how they can make cool and funny things with the technology taken from cheap toys. And so there's some of them really have a hacker approach.
Yeah, I think it's melting in a way, because many people just lacked a certain understanding of technology in general. Especially computers have been seen by many artists as being something that's totally out of proportion, not really related to art itself. It's like a number crunching machine. I would say for the hacker scene, this was always no discussion at all. I mean, there's these famous hacker ethics, this 10 golden rules. There's no good name for it. It's from the book Hackers, Heroes of the Computer Revolution by Stephen Levy. He was observing a hacker scene from the 60s on, and he wrote down a couple of sentences that sort of describe what he was seeing. And one of them was, you can create art and beauty with a computer, which by then was a totally radical point of view, because computers were this huge garage filling machines blinking a bit, but not really related to art at all or beautiful things, but more to making machines, making industrial processes work and calculating money. So that was really a new thing. And when the hackers came in and took the machines and tried to work with them and create things, they really focus on beautiful things like the early computer games and just funny things also. So that's also why this main central room at the Chaos Communication Congress is called the Art and Beauty Area. This is directly relating to this. So it was always my understanding that hacking itself is art. And on the other hand, I would expect artists to think of their process as hacking as well. Would you share that
idea? I think some of them really have that approach. It's like I've interviewed and met many artists, and it's each time it's a different approach. They have different opinion because they came from different backgrounds, and some of them, as I said, are not per se artists. They were engineers or architects. So also, I've got the problem with the definition of new media art, is that you can put so many things, and an increasing number of practice and people, and it's still the same name, new media art.
And the media is no longer really new, is it?
Yeah,
as well.
Yes, we can add this.
Okay. Here with Regine Debatty from We Make Money Not Art, and we were also talking about the way artists and hackers resemble or don't. One point that comes to my mind is that many artists I met have a very reserved way of dealing with their own ideas. Many people get annoyed by other people's ideas and calling them their ideas, and I had this idea before. I bumped into this when we did the Blinken Lights project, and so many people were coming to me saying, you stole my idea, and I had that idea before. And I just looked at them and said, yeah, of course you did, and other people before us did as well. I mean, actually, there are a couple of projects that have been there before where we're basically doing the same thing and following the same idea. So and we never claimed it to be anything new in that respect. There were some aspects of it that were new in that sense. There were no other projects that were doing it the same way, but it was so obvious. And one day even a journalist called me and told me about this, what's it called, the Turner Prize in England, that was given to a guy who had an installation where there was one room with one lamp and the lamp was switching on and off. And I asked him, okay, so what does it mean? Do we get 144 awards now? Because we had like 144 of them. You found that quite funny. So he was asking me if he was talking to me if well, you as an artist, I don't know what really recall what he said. And I said, well, I'm not an artist. I'm a hacker. I mean,
yeah, but to me, Bleak and Line is like a piece of art. You see, it's like that. There's the boundaries are quite blurred.
It's definitely a piece of art, but I didn't feel like an artist because my image of the artist was a totally different approach, because they were not sharing and they had a totally different approach towards this idea thing. I think there is no such thing as a original idea, because whatever comes up in my mind, definitely thousands of people will have it had already. Probably they didn't do anything about it. Yeah, and maybe there's some other asshole that comes 3 years later and tries to put a patent on it. So that's things that happen. But that doesn't mean I have a bad image of artists per se. What I'm just lacking is this push toward sharing things and sharing ideas and also sharing tools. Yeah, we were sharing our software, and you might have seen all these small projects coming out of it. So because they were just taking up on the original idea, they were just taking the documentation and also the code, not only the code, they were writing their own code as well. But this really worked out, and in that respect it also worked out for us, because otherwise our project would have just ended and that's it. So now it's still alive in a way, which I find very rewarding as well. And also it gives birth to new things that at some point in time will get back to us and have new influence, and that's really something I miss. But I don't know what your experience on this is.
Well, I get the same feeling as you have, that each artist is quite jealous of what he's doing. Like, I've got one of my friends in Italy is doing art installation, and one of his big fears is to be copied by Chinese. And I think it's, anyway. And also I think one of the best way to protect your ID is to make it public, not to hide everything. And I see things moving a bit, like a new very young artist who try to open source all their process. I know one of them in particular, because I quite liked his approach. There are several projects dealing with interactive musical tables. Really, I would say like tens of them everywhere in the world. People are doing interactive musical table. And he did another one, except that he open sourced everything and tried to publicize it and invited everybody, just use what I'm doing and improve it, or help me improve it. Or if you want to do a new interactive musical table, okay, do it, but just don't go through all the pains I had to go through and try to find everything and how things work, because you've got the recipe, it's here, and just try to do something better. And it's still quite an exception.
So let's get back to the talk one more time. You mentioned a couple of projects in your talk. So can you give some examples what you were talking about and why you included it in the list?
Okay, so I wasn't talking alone. I was talking together with Lucien Gesleva. And we prepared everything together, and we could have showed many, many projects, and I think we showed many projects, but we decided to focus on the theme of the conference, which is private investigation. And we focused on two technologies in particular. One was RFID, and the others were technologies of surveillance in general, more CCTV cameras. And so our artists are using it and try to give a new meaning to these technologies. So we started with RFID, and explaining that some artists, of course, are trained to show the dark side of technology. And I gave as an example, it's a group called Zapped. They are from United States, and recently they have an exhibition in Houston. And they were showing a video about the dark sides of RFID. But for the opening of the exhibition, they thought that the best way to make people reflect and to make them laugh as well would be to distribute them a very peculiar box. Like, they arrive at the opening and they have the box, and inside them there were huge cockroach. The cockroach is from Madagascar, and they had attached an RFID tag
on the cockroach.
Yeah, disgusting. And they gave one to every person who accepted it. And they invited them to take the cockroach home and then to free it in their local supermarket, the Walmart supermarket, the one that really is pushing toward the universal acceptation of RFID. And just to release the cockroach in the supermarket, and hoping that it would taint the database of Walmart. So, and then we showed other projects that use RFID, and explaining that RFID is just a technology in itself. It's not that bad. So they just showed projects which were using RFID in a kind of way that would try to improve the life of people. Like, one of them is one of my favorites. It's called Peripheral Needs, and it's for people who have obsessive compulsive disorders. Like, they go to work and suddenly they are having cold sweat. They are in the bus and they think, oh, did I turn off the light or the oven or whatever? And so they have to get out of the bus and they go back home just to check if everything is turned off. Or they wake up in the middle of the night and they just go downstairs to see if the toaster is switched off. So it works like this. Next to on every single electrical appliance, there's a Velcro, and it has an RFID tag. And underneath on the electrical appliance, that there's a reader. So you just take off the Velcro, and by taking off the Velcro, you deactivate the electrical appliance. And that Velcro part, this small tag, you can put it on a special bag. This bag is black, and it has a special place where you just put your Velcro tags. So you are in your bus and you feel bad because, oh, did I switch off the oven? And you just have to look at your bag and you see that the switch of the oven is there. So you don't have to go back home and you don't have to get nervous. And you also made a pillow. So if you are sleeping and wake up and you are nervous, you just check the pillow and you will see that all your electrical appliances, all the switches are sleeping next to you. So we did something similar we tried to show a similar project with artists using surveillance technology. But this time, we only found projects of artists which were criticizing surveillance or just using as a tool, but none of them say, hey, you know, CCTV cameras are great, let's use them more. And they don't make good publicity for CCTV cameras. So
I find this quite interesting, especially cameras and RFID, also in the hacker scene, you know, a very complicated topic. Because on one side, it's just technology, and our general standpoint on technology is that there's always a chance and there's always a risk attached to it. And it's very difficult that if you know that a certain technology is really prone to risk, mm-hmm. although there are chances, to get any positive image on it, especially when it comes to surveillance cameras right now. But also RFID is sort of, very, very problematic area. What do you think, how artists could or should deal with it, and what they can contribute in that context? Is there anything?
I think it's... they could raise awareness. Like, there was one of the projects I quite like, which is called Troya. And Troya stands for Temporary Residence Intelligent Agent. And Troya is a kind of huge stage that is easily transportable, that goes from city to city. And inside the stage, there are interactive installations that explain things about surveillance technology. But what's interesting is that there are also intelligent agents, it's undercover agents. They are just actors, and they are not detected as actors. And their role is to mingle with the crowd, to talk with people, and to try to stimulate discussion about surveillance, and try also to infuse some information, some opinion, hoping that when the stage closes and they go to another city, people will go back and talk about discuss about surveillance with their family and go on with the discussion. So I think that their role is important in the way they have some impact, and they show something very easy to understand and to grasp, something very, very physical that the man of the street can understand. You see, today give an example which is a bit depressing. We both think it was a bit depressing. There's this project in the United States called IC, and it's basically a map of the CCTV cameras around the city. I think it was in New York. So if you want to go from point one to point B, you can check your program on the PDA, and it will explain you which route you should take to be the less possible under the eye of the surveillance camera. And you see, it was explained that the friend of his tried to do something similar in London, but he made it in a particular neighborhood, which was Hackney. And the people there were just very happy to be under the eye of surveillance camera. They quite like it. So it's.
Yeah, that's amazing. Many people don't really think about the whole context like the hackers usually do. And yeah, that's a problem. That's really what's pushing surveillance cameras forward. I think it's basically about fear. People are just fearing things that other people tell them. Well, you are in danger. If we are filming everything, then you are no longer in danger.
And that's simple and works. Ready to accept. And also, they have just one. The information is presented in one way. So if artists could come and make people reflect, maybe not present another way, but incite people to reflect about what is given to them. I think that's the role of artists. Make people think.
Yeah, and I think that's the role of the hackers as well, to make people think. Okay, Regine, I think that's enough for now. Thank you very much for joining me here in our little Congress podcasting studio.
Thank you for having invited me.
Yeah, and thanks for your talk as well at the Chaos Communication Congress. The recording of this talk is going to be online soon. I can't really say when, but people are working on this. So if you want to check back and see that, we're going to provide the links on our website, events.ccc.de. That's the blog that's reporting on the ongoing 22nd Chaos Communication Congress, which goes until the 30th of December here in Berlin. And if you want to check out the work of Regine, it's the weblog wemakemoneynotart.com. And I can really recommend it. So thanks again, and goodbye.
Awesome.